So, without waiting any longer, I'd like to introduce Ford Myers.
Thank you.
Thank you, thank you. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hi. Okay, I just want to make sure that everybody has the handout. There's a one-page handout, and there's also a little card that looks like this. Does everybody have that? Okay, if you don't, please keep your hand up. So while they're doing that, I want to say a few things. Later on, we're going to have a drawing, and three people are going to get a free autographed book to take home with them. So don't leave. Stay away, and you'll get the chance to get a free book. In addition, I have a sign-up sheet. If anybody is interested in getting our free monthly e-newsletter, which is filled with practical career tips, just put your name and your email here, and I'll add you to the database. All right, so I'll start that over here, and you can just pass it along throughout the conversation as I'm speaking, okay? Okay, thanks. Okay, so I guess we'll start. So look at the first slide right here. It says, why should I hire you? And this is very, very important point. You've got to really put yourself in the shoes of the employer. Because all they're thinking about is, why you? Why do I need you? Why should I hire you? What are you going to do for me? How are you going to make my job easier? How are you going to make me look better? Am I right? So, look, I have to be harsh about this and just tell you that they don't really care that you're unemployed. They don't really care that you've been out of work for 3 months or 6 months or 9 months or a year. I mean, they might be a nice person. They might have some empathy for you. But from a professional or business standpoint, they really just don't care. The only thing the employer cares about is, what can you do for me today? How are you going to make my job easier? How are you going to make me look better? How are you going to save me money? How are you going to make my department more productive and efficient, et cetera, et cetera? So if you put yourself around in the employer's shoes, I think you understand what I mean. How many of you people here have ever been in the position of hiring? Okay. Now imagine this. Imagine you're back in that role where you are in the hiring position and where you're stressed and you're stretched and you have a lot going on and you don't want to waste time. What were you thinking? You're thinking, what can this person do for me? How are they going to make my job easier? Why should I hire them? What makes them different? Right? You're not thinking, well, I think I'll just give them a job because, you know, it's a tough market out there and they need the money. And no, no, no. So get out of your own head and put yourself in the employer's shoes. That's why I start this presentation with this item that says, why should I hire you? Now look at the graphic. What do you see? A million people, all stuffed together. It reminds me of those shots you see of New York City, that those long camera shots where you see 10 billion people walking up the street in New York City. Well, you know, it's kind of where we are today because, as you know, there's an incredibly high percentage of the American workforce that's in transition at the moment. So, if I'm going to scare you further now, let me go to the next page, and we're going to look at a little bit of statistics. I'm not a big statistics guy, but I am going to just share a couple of facts with you. This explains trends in terms of a year ago versus now, or a little more than a year ago versus now. The perception of people back in 08, if you ask them, do you foresee having any job problems, any serious job problems in the next 12 months? If you had asked them this in 08, the light blue color, right, says that maybe 28% of people would have said, yeah, I kind of anticipate that we're going to have some job problems. But in 09, which is the blue bar, it's way up above 40, 45%. Look at the second column. People were asked, do you anticipate being laid off in the next 12 months? The first column is maybe 15% in 08 and maybe 22% in 09. And of course, it's getting worse every month now. Pay cut, do you anticipate having a pay cut? In 08, they would say maybe 12%, 13% of people, and then around 25% in 09. The really interesting statistic here, though, is the last column, which is about underemployment. You see, it's not just unemployment that's the problem. There's something called underemployment. And plenty of people are underemployed. They might be working, but they're making too little, or the job is beneath their level, right? You know what I'm talking about? Now, you know, you have to do what you have to do, and if you're living that. But I'm just here to say that there's a lot of people who are underemployed right now. So in 08, about like 3% of people would have said, yeah, I'm underemployed, or I think I'm going to be underemployed pretty soon. In 09, it shot up to 85%, 83%. That's an incredible change in less than 12 months.
Would that be people that remain with the company yet?
Probably not. I mean, in some cases, but I think they're mainly talking about people who left a job and then got a job that's beneath their level. Now, the job market is bad. It's really bad. It's the worst we've seen in 65 or 70 years. Now, I didn't make this up. I'm just telling you the facts. I'm sorry, but that's the way it is. And I could rattle off statistics and numbers, but you know what it's like. 4 million jobs, more than 4 million jobs lost since this recession began. In 1 week alone, something like 650,000 jobs were lost. Excuse me, 1 month alone. So it's a scary time. But you didn't do anything wrong, and it's not your fault. And I can't tell you how many people come into my office in my career coaching business and really think and feel and believe that it's their fault, that they screwed up, that their job was lost because of their incompetence, that if they had been more professional, more on time, more productive, they would have kept their job. And they really personalize this. They really make it very, very personal. Now, I feel bad about that, but my first job, of course, is to turn that around for people and show them that it's really not their fault and they didn't do anything wrong, in most cases at least. So should you look back and think, could I have done anything differently? Yes, of course. But in most cases, people will realize that it really had nothing to do with their own performance. It had more to do with external circumstances. Correct? So we cannot control external circumstances. We can't control the economy. We can't control the job market. We can't control these statistics. What we can control is what?
Ourselves,
exactly. We can control our own behavior. We can control our own skills, our own effort, our own knowledge, our own time. Now, here you are on a Saturday morning, and as Todd said, there's 10,000 things you'd rather be doing this morning, but you're here. And that's really, really important because that's something you can control. You can keep learning, you can keep practicing, you can improve your performance, and you truly can make yourself a standout candidate. That's why we're here today, to talk about how to make yourself a standout candidate and be the one of choice, be the one who gets hired. So there's this kind of an approach, which is, it's a little bit hard to see because of the lighting in here, but that's an old building, and on top of the building is this huge billboard. And the billboard says what? Hire me! And then it has her little website link right there. Now, this is what I call desperate measures. This reeks of desperation, doesn't it? This is a desperate person who spent their last $2,000 or $5,000 in the world on trying to, you know, get noticed. Now, if you're an employer, are you going to react positively or negatively to this? Usually negatively. These kinds of things don't work. These desperate measures don't work. Don't do this. Okay? It's a losing battle. Don't stand in the corner of 16th and Market with a sandwich board on your chest that says, you know, we'll work for food. And don't do this. Instead, what works is a series of subtle, nuanced actions that will, in fact, separate you from the rest of the candidates. So we're going to talk about some of those actions today. So don't do this, okay? Just don't do this. Now, as I said, there's a series of steps or subtle actions and nuanced behaviors. The foundation of success is that successful people understand that this is going to go through a series of phases. It's a process, okay? It's a process. So it's not like you lose your job on Wednesday morning and then by Thursday you're going to have a new job. I mean, that's just silly and it's naive. People understand that it's a step-by-step sequence of actions, behaviors, events, and this is really what it's all about. It's about having a plan. It's about following the plan and building success, usually on a slow but steady basis. Don't expect this overnight sensation. Instead, expect to build towards success in a slow but steady manner. So if you go through phases or steps, this is what I call the self-discovery phase, which is number one, of course. People always say to me, what's the first thing I should do after I lose my job? What's the first thing I should do? The answer is nothing. The answer is just don't do anything. Just sit down and think and ponder and reflect and look back and plan and, you know, monitor what your feelings are and think about what you want to do next. I don't mean to sit there for 3 months, but you got to sit there for maybe a day or two at least and just, you know, be present and understand what's going on around you and try to get some objectivity, try to get some perspective. Okay? Now, I know you want to spring into action, but as Todd said, I think Todd said, the worst thing you can do is rush home and start zipping out emails and, you know, resumes to 5,000 employees. That is the worst possible thing you can do, so don't do that. You've really got to be patient, you've got to be intelligent and mature about this. So just capture yourself, presence, you know, be patent, and put together a plan. Now, part of that plan is the self-discovery process. I'm talking about doing actual exercises which can help you to gain perspective and to get your footing again. We have exercises in my work, things like something called passions and gifts, your values, your accomplishments, the vision of your ideal workday, the perfect job description, your company wish list. These are all tools that we develop because they're absolutely essential to sort of getting your bearings again and getting some perspective. So what you don't want to do is just this knee-jerk reaction and rush out and apply to 500 jobs. What you do want to do is just slow down, take your time, and move through phase one. Now, phase two is planning. This is where you actually begin to develop all your tools, what I call your self-marketing portfolio. So you'll need items like, of course, a resume, yes, but you also need a verbal positioning statement or what some people call the 15-second commercial. You'll need a departure statement or exit statement, which is a paragraph that explains why and how you exited your last position. You need a one-page biography, which is a sort of a soft sell document that explains in broad strokes what your professional background is. You'll need a contact list, meaning everybody on the planet who knows your name. That's your contact list. You'll need a list of target companies. These are companies and industries that you've researched and identified as the places where you would most like to work. Sort of like a salesperson would have a prospect list, okay? You, as a job seeker, need a target list of companies you are going after. Cover letters, of course, recommendation letters, references, and very important, of course, is a networking strategy. So networking in our world is not sitting around chit-chatting with your friends. Networking is a business meeting that has a purpose, structure, and expectations on the back end. Make sense? If you're not familiar with these tools, I'll tell you how you can get familiar. If you're not great at networking, obviously there's ways that you can learn networking, whether it's seminars, coaching, books, articles, nonprofit groups. You know, there's no shortage of information out there. It's up to you. It's your responsibility to learn these skills and to use these tools. No one is responsible for that except you. Okay? And finally, the implementation. Implementation means putting it all into action. So, you're going to be networking, interviewing, managing all your activities. As this fellow over here, John, said, track it, measure it, record it. This is not some vague, amorphous process where you're lost in gray matter. This is supposed to be a project with a beginning and a middle and an end. It has milestones. It has measurable outcomes. Look, if you're not tracking and monitoring or measuring, how are you going to know how you compare next week's performance to this week's performance? If you're in sales, and I'm your sales manager, and I come to you and say, how was your performance this week, and how was your performance last week, and you go, oh, I don't know, I guess I'm just making calls, you know, I don't know. That's not a good answer. I want to see metrics. I want to know what you're actually producing. So you should be your own sales manager, see? Your own sales now. What's the product? You. You've got to think of yourself, unfortunately, as a product that needs to be marketed, sold, and bought. And if that's true, then you can think of yourself as a sales manager or a salesperson. You have a list of prospects. You want to have a high closing ratio, right? And you want to get results and make your next week's performance much better than this week's, and on and on and on. So when I meet with clients, we sit down and I say, show me your report. And they give me their weekly report, which is numerical. We measure interviews, networking meetings, phone calls, resumes that went out, letters that went out. And I'm like a doctor. I look at it sort of like a doctor would look at an x-ray. And I say, ah, I see now where you're strong and where you're weak. I see where you need help and where you don't. And then we can adjust their course very slightly to produce better results. It works like a charm. So get out of this gray, amorphous, vague thing and get into specificity, get into measurement, get into milestones. So that's, you know, those are the three phases that I want to talk to you about here today. Now, the tips to stand out. Everyone wants to stand out and be the candidate of choice, right? What are some of the tips? Well, got to act with urgency. Now, I don't mean rushing out 5 minutes after you've been laid off and doing all this crazy behavior. I mean, once you actually do get into the search, your attitude needs to be one of urgency. Move fast, move quick, move smart. You've got to demonstrate to yourself and to the employer that you're a get-it-done person. You're a go-to person. If someone gives you something to do, it's going to get done, it's going to get done right, and it's going to get done fast. That is really key. I'm sure you can understand what I mean. Identifying needs and focusing on solutions. This is huge. When you're at a networking meeting or an interview, you pretty much have one job, and that is to probe and ask and understand what's the other person's needs and problems and challenges. Remember, it's not about you. It's about them. What's their needs and problems and challenges? Once you get really clear on that, then you have the opportunity to match up your assets, strengths, and contributions. Remember what I said before? All they're interested in is, what can you do for me? Or as someone once said, everyone's favorite radio station is WIIFM. What's in it for me? So this is the point you have to keep in mind. They're only listening to one radio station. So it's a question of matching up, what did I say, your assets, your strengths, your abilities, your contributions to the company's what? Needs, problems, their bottom line. Thank you. Their bottom line. So that's important. Improving your personal image. Now, this is important too, but a lot of people don't think about this. You've got to look in the mirror and say, am I projecting the right image? Am I presenting myself in the most positive, effective way I possibly can? Do I need new glasses, new haircut? Should I go get my smile fixed? Should I get a new suit? Should I buy a new dress? I don't know. New glasses, maybe. I'm not saying to do this just for the sake of being, you know, frivolous or superficial. I'm saying that your image really counts. First impressions count. And you want to be aware of this, conscious of this. You can even ask some trusted friends or family members, what do you think? How do I look? Am I at my best? Do I need to lose weight? Do I need to get another haircut? Do I need to get new glasses? Whatever it is, you want to be at your best and come off as a sharp, presentable, and really professional image. And it's great sometimes when clients will come into my office after a couple of weeks, you know, we've been meeting for a couple of weeks, and they come in looking very different. And I say, wow, you look really great. Like, what'd you do? And then they tell me what they've been doing, and it really helps. It makes a difference. 5% of a difference can make all the difference sometimes. Enhancing your career documents. I talked before about a whole host of documents. And in our work, we literally have 10, 12 different tools that the individual goes out with to market themselves. The key is to have the right tool at the right time for the right person and the right purpose. So you don't just go around with a single tool called the resume and shove it in everybody's faces. A resume should be used very sparingly, very infrequently. Sorry, Louise. People who write resumes for a living, you know, God bless them, and I write resumes too, but it's not the most important tool. It's used very sparingly. It should be used when? Well, if you're talking to a recruiter, they might want to see your resume. If you go into an interview and the interviewer says, I'm sorry, I don't have a copy of your resume. Do you have a copy? Then, of course, we give them a resume. Or if you're posting your resume online, use a resume. If you're spending half an hour to an hour a week applying for jobs online, which is the maximum time you should be spending applying for jobs online, okay, use the resume. But all other times, don't use the resume. Leave it at home. There's a whole host of other tools that are more appropriate. So, for example, in the case of going on a networking meeting, you would want to leave your resume at home and instead use something called a one-page biography. A one-page biography, which is a softer sell document, and it gives a broad overview of your professional background, but it doesn't scream, I need a job, like a resume can. And there are other tools you might want to bring. But again, it's a question of learning the technique of using the right tools at the right time for the right purpose. The analogy I always use is this, and some of you may have heard this. If you were a contractor, like a carpenter or contractor, and I hired you to come put an addition on my house, and if you showed up the first day with a hammer in your hand, and I open the door and you say, okay, I'm ready to start, and I go, well, where's your tools? Where's your power tools? Where's your truck? Where's your crew? Where's your... They go, oh, no, I just used this hammer here. Yep, I'm going to be building the whole addition with just this hammer. I'm going to look at you like you're crazy. And I'm going to fire you. But that's what a lot of people do in this context, too. They try to do a very complex job and build something big with a single tool called a resume. So don't be one of those people. Now, practicing the interviewing and negotiating skills. This is really important. You know, it's really sad to me that people will show up for interviews or show up for networking meetings and negotiation sessions completely unprepared. They're like lambs to the slaughter. They will cut you off at the knees. If you're not prepared and practiced and ready for battle, you're dead before you even begin. Now, you might be thinking, me? Negotiate? I know you're thinking that, some of you. Yeah, you negotiate, yeah. Because here's the big secret. The employer will be very disappointed if you don't. They will also really question whether they should hire you or not if you don't try to negotiate. Can anybody guess why that might be? That's right. Work is a continuous series of negotiations. Okay, that's good, yes. Any other ideas?
They Ellen? They want to hire a doorman. They want to hire someone who's going to be an effective advocate for themselves.
Exactly. They want to hire someone who's an effective advocate for the company, not a doormat, as Ellen said. Somebody else over there? That's right. They're kind of testing you. You know, they're seeing if you're going to be a tough advocate, if you're going to be a savvy negotiator for the company once you're hired. So if they offer you $50,000 and you go, oh, great, I'll take it. Well, their employer's going to say, maybe I'm not so sure. Let's back up a few minutes. I'm not sure I want to make this offer just yet. That's what I would do if I were the employer. So negotiation is incredibly important. Practice interviewing. Sit down with a friend. Sit down with a spouse or a pet and practice. Use cue cards. Then switch roles. You know, you be the employer. Let them be the employee. And vice versa. Practice over and over again. Basset hounds are particularly good at this, by the way. All right. Seek help and support. You know, there used to be a commercial, don't try this at home, right? Well, don't try this at home, meaning get help, get support. Don't just rely on your own common sense and, you know, experience. No. You've got to polish these skills. You've got to get help. Now, by help, what do I mean? As I said before, career seminars like this one, workshops, networking groups, nonprofit support groups, municipal agencies that are into helping people get jobs, career coaches like us, career counselors, outplacement firms. Go back to your college where they have a career office. You know what I'm saying? There's a whole host of opportunities, and you're just crazy if you don't take advantage of them. All right? Now, positioning yourself as an expert. Expertise is what people are looking for. They're not looking for employees. They're looking for expertise. They're looking for performers. They're looking for contributors. They're looking for people who make a difference and make an impact. And the way to convey that message to the employer is to position yourself as an expert. An expert, what? Has visibility, credibility, reputation, all those great things. And you might be thinking, well, I'm not an expert, I'm just me. How can I be a... Well, I don't buy into that, because every one of my clients is an expert, and we uncover their expertise, and we package their expertise, and we project this expertise to the world so that every employer they meet knows it. So what are some techniques to build your expertise, your brand, your reputation? Well, you can be a speaker. You can do some speaking. It doesn't have to be in front of 100 people. It could be in front of 10 people. It could be Rotary Club, Lions Club, Toastmasters, ASTD. I mean, I could go on and on and on. But whatever field you're in, you probably have an association or an organization, right? And they probably have meetings. So put your hand up and ask to be a speaker. You don't have to be the world's greatest speaker. You just have to put some ideas together and get up and talk. Then when it comes to writing, the internet is a powerful tool. You can use it to your advantage. For example, I have a monthly newsletter. And that clipboard's going around the room. If you want to sign up for it, it's free and it's packed with useful information. But the point is, it's articles. So what do? Every month I take that article and I blast it out to you guys, but I also take the same article and I post it on the internet in a couple of different sort of repositories of articles that are all over the internet. And that builds, and then they send it to other people, and it's kind of viral, you know? So I must have 15,000 links on Google at this point. But in reality, I probably only put out 20 things or maybe 50 things. So you can do the same. And you don't have to be the world's greatest writer. You don't have to be a genius. You just have to think, what am I passionate about? What am I interested in? Put some materials together, maybe a one-page article, and boom, you're off and running. Think about the employer when they Google you. What are they going to see? Are they going to see nothing? That's not good. Are they going to see negative, horrible things, what some people call your digital dirt? That's not good. So you've got to establish, manage, monitor your online identity. Yes, Louise.
I've been reading a lot of articles recommending people to have a blog.
Blog, yeah.
A blog. And what comes to mind in my age group is the amount of time that it takes, first of all, you have an ability to write.
Yeah.
Want to write. Spending that amount of time to prepare the blog. But on the other side, many of my clients ask me, who's going to read it?
Well, okay, that's a good question. You know, should she have a blog? Think of a blog sort of as a newsletter, essentially, electronic, or a dialogue that you're having on the internet with yourself and other people. So should you have a blog? Look, if you like blogging and if you're accustomed to using the internet and if you're technology savvy, if you can build up a kind of a dialogue with a lot of other folks in your online community, then sure, it just makes you more top of mind, more present. But if you're uncomfortable with it, if you're not going to do it consistently, then I wouldn't bother. But there are other ways to still get your name out there. So blogging is fine if you're so inclined.
And the other question you should answer is, how much time does a blog...
Most people I know who do blogs, unless they're maniacs, you know, like some people are, they just do it maybe an hour, hour and a half a week. That's about it. Okay? So, yes, please.
What is considered... Too much information to post? In other words, you're saying you're writing all these articles. Well, obviously, we know you.
Yeah.
You're a name. Okay, I'm becoming a name. I'm trying to become a name. So, what's my credibility?
But this is exactly my point. You don't have to be a name. You don't have to be a big shot. You just have to be you.
Okay.
And every person has something of value. Every person has something important to say.
Okay.
So I don't care if you've been hiding in the shadows for 40 years. You can still have articles, you can still have a blog, you can still say something that is important to you, and other people may find it very useful.
Okay,
yes?
One thing I'd suggest, though, for everyone is to make sure when you're publishing, whatever it is you're publishing, make sure you use your name consistently.
Yes.
For example, for me, I'm a product manager for marketing. early on, a lot of the articles that I had authored that had gone out were under Mike Kuna. So if you Google Mike Kuna, you'll see early things. And then later on, the company decided we were going to use more formal naming. So then if you Google Michael Kuna, you'll see a whole other set of things. But for someone, you know, you got to keep that consistent naming, or else you won't get the whole sum total.
Yeah, Mike, I really want to underscore what you're saying. I mean, I went through a branding change. I started my company, it was called something, and my website was my name. I have to tell you, everybody told me don't do that, and I ignored them. And about a year ago, my business name is now Julie Wentz. Everything is under my code.
Right.
And it has made a significant difference in visibility.
Yeah, well, you are your brand. You know, this is the point. You are your brand.
Okay.
And there's no other Goldie Wilson Cohen. There's only one.
Right.
So you are your brand. Okay. Anyway, let's move on. Leverage technology. Now, as Todd knows, I'm not a big technology guy. But I do use a lot of tools that are very important to leverage my own brand, my own business, my own everything. So, you know, you've all heard of LinkedIn, right?
Yeah.
All right. You've got to be on there. It's not optional. And you have to have a complete 100% great profile. And then there are a lot of other things you can do with LinkedIn aside from just putting your profile up. And that's a whole other topic, but we could talk about that some other time. There are other websites, media websites like Facebook, Twitter, MySpace, and a bunch of others. And then there's sort of...
Visual CV.
Visual CV is one of my favorites. It's not, technically speaking, a social media website, but it's kind of... It's basically like creating your own career or professional website very easily, very quickly, and it's free. It's called visualcv.com. visualcv.com. I highly recommend it. You can also find it on my website if you want to sign up through there. And my website is careerpotential.com. careerpotential.com. There you go. Okay, so these are some of the tips to stand out. So you're not powerless. You are not without recourse, even in a very down market. There are things you can do to build, to sort of flex your muscles, get stronger, more capable, and more effective. Please understand, you're not powerless. I see a lot of people who talk to me about how hopeless and powerless they feel, and they're just not using so many tools that are at their disposal. We talked about acting with speed and urgency. We talked about the personal image, which is so important. And we talked about seeking help, positioning yourself as an expert, leveraging technology. You know, the internet's a wonderful tool. Use it. There are so many great tools out there. That's a whole other seminar. Okay, let's move on now to target market. In the topic of the target market, as I said before, you want to think of it sort of like a prospect list. So if you are out looking for a new position, before you even step foot outside your house for your first interview or networking meeting, you should have already done all your research. You should already have identified the industries you want to work in and the specific companies that you most want to work with. So, for example, when you go on a networking meeting, I said before you should bring a couple of tools with you. One is the one-page biography, which is an overview of your professional background, the soft sell document. But what's the second? It's the target list. This is the second document you should bring with you to a networking meeting. The target list is a list of industries and companies that you would like to most work with. And what you actually do is give these two documents to the other person you're networking with so that they can, A, get a good understanding of your professional background, and you'll go over the biography paragraph by paragraph and make sure they understand it all. And then, secondly, you'll go through the target list so that the other person can help you. Let me explain what I mean. Let's say you go to a networking meeting empty-handed. And you say to the other person, I need a job, and can you help me? Well, what they say, what do you want to do? Oh, I want to be a senior level chemist in a pharmaceutical company. Oh, okay. And then you say, well, can you help me? Do you know anybody? Any companies? Any people? They're going to look at you cross-eyed. They're going to go, I don't know. I guess. I don't know. What do you mean? See, it's a disconnect. But if you hand them a target list of specific industries and companies, what happens? They look at the list, they go, oh, Wyeth? Yep, I know a few people at Wyeth. Oh, Smith, Cliff Klein, Beecham, or whatever they call it now. Glaxo, Cliff Klein? Yep, I know some people there too. Roman Haas? Yep, my brother-in-law used to work there, and I know the head of the chemistry department. You see, now you're helping the other person to help you. Don't show up empty-handed. Three things to bring to a networking meeting. The one-page biography, the target list, and there's one more, which is called the agenda. It's your meeting. You called the meeting. You have to run it like a business meeting. A business meeting has an agenda, maybe 6 or 8 bullet points to follow with a time frame and with the person's name at the top. It's a professional business meeting. So don't show up empty-handed. Don't show up unprepared. You've got to obviously define the criteria of the kind of places you'd like to work and then do your research. You do your homework. How do you do your homework? Well, you can use any number of tools. The internet is a great tool for researching industries and companies. You can use websites like Hoover's, Dun & Bradstreet, Vault, Manta, Google. There's a million of these things. You can also go to the Philadelphia Business Journal. They have a very interesting book called The Book of Lists. Some of you may have seen it. It's like a big tabloid-size book, and they sell it every year. You can get it online or in print.
Actually, you can go to
the library. I was just going to say, one of the biggest things that people overlook in today's world is the library. It's spelled L-I-B-R-A-R-Y. Let me tell you something. I spend a lot of time, or at least I used to, in the Free Library of Philadelphia, downtown on the Parkway. They have a whole business department. They have dedicated business librarians. They are your friends. You want to go in there and make friends with these people. Tell them what you're looking for. Tell them what you're interested in. Okay? And they will help you. They'll give you databases that you can't get access to on your own, or they're too expensive for you to buy. They'll give you directories, guidebooks. They'll give you lists and microfilm, I don't know, whatever they have in there. But by all means, use it. Here's what you do. Call downtown. You make an appointment with the business reference librarian. Gotta make an appointment. And then when you show up, they'll help you for hours. They'll give you an incredible amount of information and plan to spend at least a full day or two sitting there doing your research. Yes, Charlie?
With your library card, you can have access to databases.
Okay, good.
But if they go to Philly, they're
going
to say,
right, are you a Philly resident?
They may deny them services.
Right, no, good point.
So the county in which you live
is going to be most useful. Yeah, and you can get a lot of this stuff online. Okay, so good job on that. So, is this hard? Well, it's not really hard. It just takes time. It takes time and energy.
I want to add something real quickly, too. When I'm in between appointments, sometimes I will stop in at the library and just check email.
Right.
We can't really talk, obviously, in the library, but then I've also stopped in at the Kinko FedEx location and introduced myself and passed the cards out. Because there's public computers.
I like that.
You have to pay for them, but if you have a card, you don't even have to have a card with you. You just buy one.
I like it. It's very proactive. Good. Is that clipboard still going around?
Yes.
Who's got it? All right, so keep it moving, and thank you. And did everybody get the handouts, the sheet and the little blue card? Okay, good. Let's move on. We still have a lot to cover. By the way, how many companies do you want on your target list? Can anybody guess? Just a range? Anybody have a guess? 50? It's a good guess. Anybody else? My answer is 35 to 50. I have found that less than 35 is too little. It's not enough to sink your teeth into. And more than 50 is too much. It gets overwhelming and crazy. Now, the target list is never finished because it's always developing and changing. As you go to networking meetings, people might tell you, oh, this company's bankrupt. Take them off your list. Or they might say, dude, you forgot to add this XYZ company. And, oh, yeah, I forgot them. That's right. I got to put them on my list. So it's always ever-changing. It's a work in progress. I mean, all your tools are a work in progress, but the target list in particular is a work in progress based on the feedback and the information that you're getting from folks. Now, we could have a whole conversation about networking, and I do, in fact, do a whole seminar on networking, but we're going to move on. Let's talk about the resume for a minute. On the topic of the resume, it has to be a standout document. There's no question. It has to be outstanding, exceptional, extraordinary. It has to jump up and sing right off the page. Otherwise, don't use it. You've got to have something that is special, stands out. I don't mean special like weird and different. I mean special in how compelling it is and how clear it is of getting your assets out to the reader. Remember that the average time someone reads a resume is, you know, 10 or 12 seconds, so you've got to grab their attention pretty quick. Now, there's all kinds of resumes. You know, there's functional resumes, there's chronological resumes, there's hybrid mixture resumes, but most people use the chronological. Chronological is the standard resume format you've seen 1,000 times, which has the job history going backwards in time, starting with the most recent job and then going back to you first started out. I'm going to show you a couple of formats, not formats, examples of resumes today, but there's any number of resumes that we could look at. So here's just some tips about the resume. It's got to be tight, succinct, concise. Get to the point. Avoid redundancy. Make it strong. Use action verbs that put you in the driver's seat. It's got to be highly focused and goal-directed, meaning don't make it all over the map. Don't try to be all things to all people. Focused, targeted toward your professional goals and direction. State your results and quantify them. There's a big difference between saying increased sales within the such and such department versus saying increased sales 25% within 6 months from $1 million to $1.25 million. See, that's, did I do that right? Yeah. That's a big difference. You want to talk in terms of quantified, measurable results. Every line on your resume, you should be asking yourself, what can I quantify? What can I quantify? What can I quantify? You can quantify dollars, as I just did, time frames, numbers of people, numbers of projects, increases, decreases, percentages, all kinds of things that you can quantify. So make it quantified. High impact positioning statement or branding statement. So the first paragraph is your summary or your branding statement, your career summary. That has to be really powerful because that's the headline. Think of it as the headline of a news article. If you are reading the paper and you read a headline that grabs your attention, then you'll read the subheadline. And if you like the subheadline, you might read the body of the article, right? That's how the resume is. If you don't grab them with the headline, they're not going to read any of the rest of it. So your paragraph, your summary, your branding statement has to be strong. Feature your accomplishments. Again, not vague statements. Make specific accomplishments. Examples of where you went above and beyond the duty, the call of duty. Examples of when you exceeded the expectations of the position. Tangible, proven, measurable results. You all have them. You just have to go back and dredge them up again. So when you're looking at the resume, I'll show you in a minute what the accomplishments could look like. Now, no jargon. I know a lot of people are in the technology fields, science fields, computer fields, engineering fields, and I rip all that stuff out. When I have clients like that, I just rip it all out. All this jargon words. Look, if I don't understand it, it's gone. I want the resume in plain English.
Sometimes when you apply online, they look at your resume and look for keywords. So that would be...
Well, yes. So let's talk about that. I believe in something else called a resume addendum. An addendum could be a list of all the software packages you know, or a list of all the engineering projects you've done, or whatever. So you want to get real technical, that's fine, but a resume is not the place to do it, in my opinion.
You could also use the addendum, like, say, you're an instructor on all the courses.
Yes, addendum could be presentations and papers. Addendum could be, you know, volunteer work, if you've done a ton of volunteer work that's related to your field.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's okay, but don't
get screened out if they're not there.
That's fine, but don't put it throughout the whole resume. That's what drives people crazy. See, look, there's going to be recruiters looking at your resume, secretaries are looking at your resume, non-technical, low-level managers are looking at your resume, and if they can't understand it, they're just going to throw it out. So you've got to make it plain English. And your letters, cover letters, plain English. Now, there are times when a functional resume makes more sense. So, for example, if you've been out of work for a long time and you're just returning to the market, or if you're completely changing industries, a functional resume might make more sense. What's a functional resume? A functional resume is one that puts right up front your functional skills, your skill sets, as opposed to putting your chronology of work history right up front. Okay? Or if you have big gaps in your employment history, that's another time you might want to use a functional resume. Why? Because it downplays these problems and it upplays your functional strengths. Let's look at the size. The typical resume for professionals like yourself should be 2 pages. So I know that some of you still have this idea that a resume should just be 1 page. So that's fine when you're just coming out of high school, but that's not true anymore for you guys, because you're professionals now with lots of great experience. So you've got to have a 2-page resume, and sometimes we even go to 3 pages. But that's for someone who's really, really, really experienced and has an enormous amount of value. Okay, so if you've been out of work for a year or so...
Well, he hasn't worked since last year, so he's nothing there for 2009.
Right. So you could leave it blank and just talk about your most recent job. And if they say, what have you been doing? You give them your exit statement that explains what you've been doing. Okay?
Yeah.
And then... some people who are in fields that are related to consulting, and this doesn't apply to everybody, they will put such and such consulting, that they've been doing consulting projects for the past year. But don't do that unless it's true. Don't just put my consulting business, if you haven't done any consulting. It has to be real and proven, because they might say, well, what kind of projects have you done? And what results have you produced? So you've got to be honest about this. Okay? So let's take a look here. This is just a typical resume. I'm not saying it's the greatest resume in the world. I'm not saying it's my favorite that I've ever done with a client. But it's a typical resume. And you'll notice that it has this thing up here, which is called either a branding statement or a career profile or a summary. So she comes right out and says, senior management executive. No question about what she is or what her role is. It doesn't say chemist. It doesn't say professor. It says senior management executive. And then it has specific areas that really make her stand out. This is what she brands herself with: vision and strategy, P&L responsibility, operations management, culture change. You get a real quick sense of what she's all about, right? And then you go into the professional experience. See, Julia, look here. JM Consulting. That's what she did, because she had been out for a while, and she actually did do some consulting, so she used that. Now, I want to point out something else. This guy, Alan, here, he has a slightly different approach where he has a career summary. But even there, it's very clear, right from the start, who he is and what he does. Senior marketing executive, 15 years. Talks about his strengths and his assets. But notice down here, I want to point out something that's extremely important. Name of the company, date, title. Then you have this paragraph here. This paragraph is an overview description of the job. What are the roles and responsibilities of the job? So in other words, if you have the job, Julia, or if I have the job, it's the same job. That's basically the condensed job description. Are you with me here? Then what's this? Does anybody know what these are? Accomplishments. Indented, bulleted accomplishments. Every one of these means by definition that it's over and above the roles and responsibilities expected in the job. These are things where this person was particularly proud, where they produced positive, tangible results, where they showed personal initiative, where they may have received special recognition or praise. That's what these are. They're not the same. So don't do a resume where you have bullet, 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 and it's just all bullets, because I can't understand that. I'm going to make you pull it apart and say, well, which part of this was responsibilities and which part of this was accomplishments? Similarly, don't just give me big paragraphs. It's too dense, I can't read it very well, and I still don't know what's accomplishments and what's responsibilities. Yes? Somebody had a question?
Right here.
There you go.
Every now and again I'll run into a recruiter and talk about a position, and she'll want to really tweak, or he'll want to really tweak my resume.
Yeah, good question.
In order to, you know, present me in a most positive light. And now I'm in a position where I'm giving them one resume, but I have another resume online that's maybe focused a little differently.
Well, one of the rules is never let a recruiter touch your resume at all unless they check with you first and unless you approve of the changes. So that's one of the rules you've got to make very clear to the recruiter right up front. Now, if they make some recommendations that you're okay with, say, okay, fine, go ahead. But if you don't like it, say no. Okay?
Is
Is that your question?
Well, the other question was, I have another resume that's static. I mean, it's online, and I'm not going to change that to reflect every position I'm applying for. Is that an issue that I'm having to think of?
Not really. I don't think it's a big problem. So let's move on. Another branding statement here. I think you get the idea, right? Either way, whether you like the approach of the previous guy or whether you like this better. But now look at the summary here. This is your positioning statement, essentially. More than 15 years experience delivering promotional strategy that drive year-over-year revenue growth, pioneer. You know, that's their statement. You get a real clear understanding of what their contributions are. Okay? You need a statement like this. If you can't clearly articulate your positioning, your value statement, then there's something seriously wrong and you need to work on that. Don't improvise. Don't make it up. Memorize it. Write it and memorize it. Yes, that's right. I said memorize. I leave nothing to chance. The documents are all prepared in advance. The statements are all memorized in advance. When you go in there, you've got to be like an actor going on the stage, absolutely ready, totally prepared with your script. Same with networking meetings and your networking agenda. Same with interviews when you go in and they ask you, what questions do you have for us? You don't want to sit there and go, okay, I don't know. That's a bad answer. A good answer is to say, well, I actually do have 10 questions here I'd like to talk to you about, or something like that. All right, is everybody with me? Cool, yes. By the way, don't leave because we're going to be giving out some free books. Okay. You can't lie, but you can spin. What I'm saying here is that you're all in marketing. You're all in sales. Marketing is about what? Spin. Positioning. So don't lie. Don't ever lie. But you can emphasize things and de-emphasize other things to get the response you want. For example, as I said before, if you're changing industries or functions, you might want to spin it by using a functional resume. Or talk about your transferable skills. If you are 59 years old and you're applying for jobs, you might be a little concerned about the age thing. Okay, well, there are ways to de-emphasize, you know, your age on the resume. For example, some people take out their graduation dates. Some people will eliminate the first couple jobs they had when they started their career. You know, these are subtle things, but it can make a difference. It can make a difference in the impression that your resume conveys. Chronological gaps, we talked about that. Maybe a functional resume would be smart there. Or you might be able to put in consulting work in between. Yes?
How far should you go back?
That's a good question. It varies according, according to who you ask.
10 years after, if you don't go back 10 years, nobody cares. But I mean, if you're older, how far? You're dropping off some really good things.
Yeah. I think it depends on how valuable the things are from long ago. So if you have a couple of jobs when you were 26 that you thought were great, and that really show who you really are and what you contribute, then keep them. And if you feel like, that's old stuff, it doesn't really relate to my work anymore, then take it out. It's individual. It has to do with how connected it is to your current career path. Ellen.
When you go to interview, do you don't have a sense of career search strategies? For example, say you involve that team. Just give me a stamp of your resumes and I'll hand it out.
Okay.
How do you shift those people into this
situation? Right. Okay, so if a friend of yours says, you're out of work, no problem. Give me 50 resumes and I'll pass them out to my friends and relatives. Well, the person means well, right? They're trying to help, but it's misdirected. So what you would do is say, I really appreciate that and I know you're trying to help, but what would be much more helpful to me is if you would tell me who are these people who you think might be of value, and then let me contact them myself. Because I've learned that it's much more effective if I do this myself, and I can make a more direct connection, and I can explain my value much more quickly and efficiently. That works. What doesn't work is to have everybody spreading around your resumes like confetti. Okay. Adapting big business to small and vice versa. Let's say you worked for a really small company, and now you're trying to get a job with a big company. Well, you know what? They're not going to like you necessarily. You're not their brand. You're not their breed. So you have to kind of reposition yourself sometimes, and vice versa. So can it be done? Yeah, it can be done, but it takes some real finesse. It takes some real finesse to do that effectively. Okay. Standout references. Yes, Julia?
And I think it was something that you said to me earlier. If
about giving out your resume, and you alluded to it earlier when you said, you know, you can only control yourself. Once you give out your resume,
you've lost control. That's a very good point. And same with the thing about recruiters changing your resume around. You got to have references. You've got to have letters of recommendation, too. In this world, you need every piece of ammunition you can get. So don't be all uppity and say, well, I'm a professional. I don't need letters of recommendation. I haven't had a letter of recommendation since I was in high school. Yes, you do need letters of recommendation. You need every piece of ammunition you can get. And good letters of recommendation are very powerful. That third-party validation really goes a long way. So you want to reach out to people who will vouch for you, who will sing your praises. Ask them to either write a letter of recommendation or to serve as a phone reference on your list. Provide supporting documents. Don't just let them wing it. Give them the supporting documents so they know what to say and so they project a consistent message to your audience. Give them clear expectations and time frames. You say, will you write this letter by August 1st? I need it by August 1st. Don't just say, write me a letter. Edit as needed. You reserve the right to either edit or ask them to edit and make some final changes to the draft. Got it? Follow through and finalize. If they don't give you the letter by August 1st, get on the damn phone and call them and say, hey, where's my letter? You said you'd give it to me by August 1st.
So you're suggesting a physical paper letter?
Yes.
That we have multiple copies?
Yes.
That we can get out at will.
Yes. Now, this letter, by the way, should have no date and no salutation. It doesn't say, dear anybody, to whom may concern. It doesn't say, ladies and gentlemen. None of that. It just says, I'm writing to recommend Golda. She's a great person. You should hire her. It just goes right into the letter. All right? Now, they can give you a color thing, you know, on their letterhead. Right? It's on their letterhead. And you can take it to Kinko's and have it color copied.
But what about recommendations on LinkedIn?
Oh, yeah. Recommendations on LinkedIn are great. Absolutely. And they can be the same people who might be on your list of phone references.
So can you copy and paste the references that you got on LinkedIn onto another
you
sheet
could,
of paper?
But I would call that more like a testimonial sheet. You could.
That is a
yeah.
Okay.
What I also do with clients, by the way, is we take snippets, excerpts from the letters of recommendation, and we create something called a testimonials sheet. One page, and has quotation marks around all these little statements. It's two or three sentences, person's name, testimonial, 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 all on one page. Very powerful. Very powerful. Okay, networking. Listen, folks, it's the top priority. Top, top, top. I used to tell people, spend 75% of your time networking. Now I tell them, spend 90% of your time networking. That's how important it is. You've got to become an ace networker, an absolute expert networker. There is no alternative. Internetworking simply means networking through the internet, using LinkedIn, using blogs, using email, using all these things to get your name out there and meet people and have them meet you. It's all big thing, and it's great, and it's a lot of fun. Set goals. Track and measure your activities. We actually have forms, online forms and paper forms, where people track all their activity and measure so they can see where they're going week to week. Here's a typical positioning statement. We looked at one before that was on one of those resumes. But this is a typical statement that you'd write and memorize and deliver about 50 times a day. This is going to become like your DNA. It's going to become your name, rank, and serial number. This is that important. It's very value-oriented. It doesn't show any kind of baggage or, you know, emotional leftovers from being laid off. It shows a clear direction and focus. It's very positive. The interview, you've got to research the company in advance, and you've got to research the interviewers, too. In advance. You want to exude confidence, be early, firm handshake, all that good stuff. Find opportunities to contribute. It's always, what can I do for you? What are your biggest needs? What are your problems? What are your challenges? And how can I potentially match and meet those needs? Consistent, appropriate follow-up. Business-like, appropriate. By the way, folks, we're going to be emailing this entire presentation to all of you. And there's a lot of notes underneath these graphics, which you'll find to be even more useful. Yes?
Just in terms of getting to the interview, what's your sense on reaching out and trying to contact the hiring manager when you know about an open position?
As opposed to?
Does that help as opposed to just getting your resume in there.
Yeah, always go to the hiring manager.
There's no risk that it's not something.
There's a little bit of risk, but it's much more risky not to. So it's very proactive. You want to go direct to the hiring manager. Try to avoid HR at all costs.
So, I mean, one of the strategies that I did in LinkedIn is just reaching out to people. And I saw, for example, a manager that was hiring and trying to do a cold call through LinkedIn.
Yeah.
But normally I have to use the friend option because really it's the only way you can
get. Yeah, no, you don't want to be contacting people cold who don't know you from Adam on the internet. You want to use your network, and even if you're reaching out through the internet, it's always got to be through someone, a mutual connection. Okay? Yeah? Yeah, there's a connection. It's all about a connection. Yeah, yeah. I think it's very dangerous because if you give them the right answer, it makes them look like idiots because they've been struggling with this for 5 years and here you come along and solve their problem in 10 minutes. So they won't like you. The second problem is that if you give the wrong answer, they think you're an idiot and they won't like you. So the way around this is to not do that for them, but to instead talk about similar challenges that you faced in the past and the results that you were able to produce in the past on similar challenges. Okay? Besides, you shouldn't be giving away spec work. Okay. All right. No, I mean that. All right, let's move on. Hello? Hello. There you go. So prepare and execute. Prepare and execute. It's all about preparation. It's all about execution. It is not about being a leaf blowing in the wind without direction. It's about focus, claim your power, be structured about this, follow a system, follow through consistently, consistently adjust course to get better performance, track and measure everything you do. You get the sense of where I'm coming from now? That's what's important. So, this piece of paper that I handed out goes into more depth. It's a good study piece to take home with you and read. It's called 20 Habits of Highly Effective Job Seekers in a Down Market. So, it's like taking this presentation and going farther and deeper. This has a lot more specific strategies that you can follow right now in today's very challenging job market. If you want to be the candidate of choice, if you want to stand out, if you want to be the one that gets hired, use these strategies because you cannot do the search anymore the same way you used to 5 years ago. It's a different world. People have been saying to me, Ford, when is the job market going to get back to normal? Guess what my answer is?
This is normal.
Never. This is normal. I say never. If you're expecting things to go back to the way they were 5 years ago, you're living in a dream world. The entire world has shifted. The entire work world is a whole other animal right now. Now, you can look at it two ways. You can be terrified and scared and look at all the negativity and the sensationalism on CNN, or you can focus on a proven strategy, a structure, a methodology that works. You can focus on the people who are still successfully getting jobs, or you can focus on all the people who are crying in their soup. Which one do you want to be? I'd rather put you in the first camp, where you're productive, you're getting things done, and you're finding new positions. The news doesn't report about all the people who are still working. The news doesn't report about all the people who are still getting jobs, including my clients. Let's face it, not everybody is on the unemployment lines. There's still tons of people working. The majority of people are still working happily away and making a living. Remember that next time you watch CNN. Okay? All right, now, we're ending. It's time to stop. I said before that we're going to be handing out some free books. So, I need some help. What you want to do is pass forward either a business card or just write your name on a sheet of paper and tear it off. We're going to put it in this box, and we're going to be giving away, five, count them, five free books. So we're going to do a drawing out of the box.
Pass them forward.
The five people will get a free book with signature. I'm going to sign it for you. No extra charge. So let's gather up those. Either a business card or a slip of paper with your name on it.
Can you
Yeah, well, that gets into the discussion about transferable skills. You've got to focus on the transferable skills and show them that you really can add value even though you haven't been in that field. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
We're going to do a drawing. Let's see what's happening.
Yeah.
All right, who's here for the first time? Give me a hand. Hey, miss, come on up here.
That's good.
Okay,
we're giving out five.
Now, everyone, your name and what you do, and then pick a card.
My name is Denise Wooder, and I'm a human resources professional specializing in benefits administration.
Outrageous. Pick a winner. You can't pick yourself.
Okay. Oh, yeah,
we're giving away five autograph books, so I hope you're one of them.
Felix Gutierrez.
All right.
Thanks. Okay, newbie, sir, come on, are you new? First time? Yeah, come on down. Come on down. Same routine.
I'm Mark Revez. I'm a technical communicator, which means I write manuals and online help for almost any kind of product you could imagine.
Great. What about self-help books? Never mind.
No comment. I pick Dave Fink.
Dave!
Okay.
All right.
Great. Another new person. You're new, right? First time? Come on down.
That's two. Three to go. The anticipation is killing me.
Everyone, okay, who you are, what you're looking for, and pick a winner.
I'm Stacey Henry. I'm a training and development specialist. And I pick Jerome Green.
Right here. Right?
There you go.
All right. Right. We have what, two more?
Yeah.
Two more?
Yeah.
All right. Our erstwhile photographer is going to pick one.
Yeah.
Wait, who are you?
I'm Mike Hughes. I am an adjunct professor at Pierce College in Philadelphia, working in Lander full time.
Okay.
I pick Dave Brown.
Dave?
Thank you. All right. One more new person.
Nah.
Come on. Look, three hit. Miss. Come on up.
One more, right?
One more. I can give them all the way for it if you want me to.
No.
Okay.
Hello, folks. I'm Bela Bora. I'm an advertising and marketing professional, relationship management and project management. I'm in strengths. So looking for jobs in the advertising industry.
Great.
I'm going to pick my own. Find it. Paul Perry.
Okay. There you go.
Harley, what winners didn't get a book yet? Oh, you got one? Okay, awesome. All five winners, raise your hands.
All right, that's great.
Hey.
Now, if you didn't get a book, and if you want one, I have them here. They're $20 a piece. I'll be happy to sell you one today. Or you can order them online using that little card I gave you. Either way. But obviously, today will save you the shipping and the time.
So, everybody, round of applause. Thank you for 4 minutes.
Thank you.